From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Baby Rihanna's Point.
Hayward.
Piedmont, California.
Pleasanton.
Fall Town.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we meet someone who pays the bills by running errands.
Did you do my online dating?
Can I do online dating?
What about online dating did you want to outsource?
The whole thing. It's just time consuming.
Then we'll learn about how sharing economy leaders like Uber and Lyft are treating their employees.
It's much easier for these companies to scale up or contract if they need to, if they're just, you know, have a much more casual relationship with the people doing the labor.
And we'll see what happens when teens unplug from technology.
I start to feel like jittery, like I'm on drugs or something.
We're talking tech today on Cross Currents. The way we make a living is changing. For about a third of Americans, regular hours and benefits are giving way to a patchwork of contracting, temping, and moonlighting. One sign of this trend is the takeoff of the website TaskRabbit, where so-called taskers can pick up gigs. It's a little bit like the peer-to-peer car services, Uber or Lyft, where people use an app to hire a driver. But on TaskRabbit, you can hire people to do almost anything, from common handyman work to organizing your closet to holding your place in line for the iPhone 6. This wide range means the service has the potential to transform the way a lot of work gets done in the 19 cities where TaskRabbit operates. San Francisco is one of its top users. KALW's Liza Veal spent a day in the life of a tasker and brought back this story.
Alex Holmes and I are hopping on the freeway in West Oakland to head to his first task this morning. Holmes is merging on the freeway while glancing at a task request on his phone.
If your availability is open, you have 30 minutes to respond to a task no matter what.
Holmes is an art school activist type in his late 20s, living in Oakland, and he's broke. Or he was, until he joined TaskRabbit. He's since been paid $40 an hour to work the elevator at a party thrown by a tech firm, $30 an hour to save a spot in line for the iPhone 6, and then $30 an hour to save someone a patch of grass at the Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival. He's actually managed to build a full-time job out of all these gigs, only without the security of a full-time contract, which he says gets stressful at times, like when he forgets to sign off the app.
So sometimes I'll forget and, like, leave it on at night, and I'll wake up and it'll be, like, this panic-stricken nightmare, because if you, like, lose so many tasks, they can fire you or something.
According to the website's terms of service, TaskRabbit can actually fire you for any or no reason. But so far, Holmes hasn't had any problems. He says he's gotten as much work as he wants, and he's happy to schedule his own hours and vary his work day. Holmes shoots his client a text to let her know he's outside. While we wait, somebody pops out of the apartment building nearby and chats us up. His name's Mark Lawton. He asks what we're doing.
I work for TaskRabbit, and we're going to help somebody out.
Oh, TaskRabbit. Can you make a living doing TaskRabbit?
That's currently what I'm trying to do.
Could you do my online dating?
Can I do your online dating?
But isn't the point of online dating that you're, like, authentically connecting?
No, you're just trying to get a coffee date.
This could really happen on TaskRabbit. There's a personal assistance category with all the miscellaneous tasks that don't fit into handyman, event staff, delivery, or cleaning. With some of these jobs, TaskRabbit really is creating a market that didn't exist for people who can afford it.
Hi, hey, I'm Michelle.
Yeah. Michelle, Alex.
Come on in.
Holmes is here to assemble an IKEA dresser.
Everything's in boxes here, and it's basically that.
It should take 2 hours or so, and he expects to make about $100. Not too bad for a day's work. But some say it's not so great in the long run. Ken Jacobs, with the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, says the success of TaskRabbit shows how tough it is now for recent college grads to get what their parents would call a real job, especially here.
San Francisco or the Bay Area, the tech world here is even stranger, where you've got a lot of very young people making a lot of money really quickly, while their peers are struggling to get by.
Thanks to the tech boom, there are a lot of other jobs popping up. In fact,
every tech job results in the creation of 4.5 other jobs. Some of those are accountants and lawyers, but a lot of that work is low-paid service work.
TaskRabbit is a part of that, but service jobs don't come with many securities.
In terms of health care benefits, the share of people getting health care benefits through a job has fallen. Share of people with defined benefit pensions has fallen quite dramatically. The share of people who have any kind of retirement security has fallen, and that's a real crisis. So we've had a decline, along with the stagnating and declining real wages, we've had a decline in benefits.
And Jacob says as solid middle class and union jobs disappear, the class divide becomes starker. After wrapping up his task, Alex Holmes says it's very clear what side of that divide he's on, especially when the client hiring him is not an individual person, but a tech startup or company.
Usually my least favorite tasks are when there's like a very clear line drawn in the sand of this is our space, this is our culture, and you're the help.
By Holmes' estimate, about 70% of his clients have been startups. So while TaskRabbit bills itself as neighbors helping neighbors, the exchange is often not peer-to-peer. TaskRabbit reported last April that 40% of their revenue comes from startups and even bigger companies who look to the service when they want simple one-off jobs done.
And that, honestly, unfortunately, is almost a common theme. You know, it's like you're the guy that's drilling holes into my wall and we're the dudes doing the important work here.
The task he just wrapped up was a different story. He and the client got along great, but there was a little bit of a disaster.
So yeah, of course, the one task that I'm doing that's part of this radio show is, you know, I get to the point where I'm installing these drawers, and this has already been 2.5 hours worth of work. And I'm just putting them in, finally, like, okay, I'm going to leave in 5 minutes. And of course, I nailed this one piece of, like, you know, particle board wrong. Just subtly, to the point where I had to literally take apart everything. And then realizing that now, of course, the face of the thing is going to have all these nails holes where I did it wrong.
Oh, and so, no.
But fortunately, Rochelle was like incredibly understanding. So I rescheduled with her on Monday. I'm going to like go all the way back to IKEA and then install it for free. And she's being totally understanding and awesome about it.
TaskRabbit actually has damage insurance to cover taskers in cases like this. Media Relations says the company wants to make overall conditions better for taskers. They've set a minimum wage of $11.20. higher than the city of San Francisco's for the time being. And they've introduced a portal that connects taskers to discounted health insurance policies. They say they can make tasking a secure job and keep the flexibility and the intimate neighbors helping neighbors feel.
So, of course, I had to deal with that. I had to swallow some pride.
What, you mean for the radio show? I mean, we don't...
No, just to tell Rochelle, just to be like, Rochelle, okay, so that thing that I've been doing for the last 2.5 hours...
Oh, that must have been a bad feeling.
Yeah, not nice.
In the end, Rochelle gave Holmes a good review. Not because he did a good job, but because she thought he was a good guy. In San Francisco, I'm Liza Veal for Cross Currents.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Peer-to-peer companies like TaskRabbit have become a powerful part of the economy. Now, some of the workers propelling that sector are organizing to ask for more from the companies that pay them. Uber and Lyft drivers have filed a lawsuit. They want to be made employees rather than contractors and receive the benefits mandated by the state of California. Carolyn Said is a business reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's been covering negotiations between tech and labor, and she talked with KALW's Ben Trefney to help make sense of it all.
What's the legal case for why these drivers should be recognized as employees?
So drivers, as well as other workers for on-demand companies like Handy.com, where there is also a lawsuit pending,
are currently classified as independent contractors. However, in the lawsuits, the drivers and the cleaners are making the case that the companies are setting the terms of their employment. They're telling them what to wear, in the case of the cleaners, where to go, what to do, how to relate to the customers. They're setting a whole range of conditions that ordinarily they wouldn't really do for independent contractors, according to these lawsuits.
So because they have to follow so many regulations and basically they feel like they're being treated like employees rather than contractors, they think they should be paid accordingly or receive benefits like that?
Exactly. I wouldn't use the word regulations. These would be rules. They don't have the protections afforded to regular full-time workers or even regular part-time workers, which would be things like minimum wage, overtime pay, the company paying into workers' compensation, the company paying into Social Security, and something that's very key is the right to collective bargaining, which is under the National Labor Relations Act is only available to employees.
Even though there are so many contract employees now rather than salaried employees, because that's changed, that hasn't been adapted for collective bargaining?
That's correct. So actually, that would be something that could happen at the legislative level if the National Labor Relations Act were amended for sort of the 21st century reality that a third, heading toward 40% of workers are not employees, they're contractors.
So what's the defense for the ride-sharing companies or for Handy.com to not treat them like salaried employees?
Well, those companies say that they're really just marketplaces, that they are connecting these individual entrepreneurs, they're called micropreneurs, with customers, so that they're simply, you know, but they take it quite a step beyond, like putting an ad on Craigslist saying, you know, I'll come to your house and fix your plumbing. So the company's defense is that the workers are free to accept or reject any job assignments. They're not required to do them. Although, on the other hand, you know, Uber drivers are penalized if they don't accept a certain number of ride requests. And the companies are saying these are just suggested guidelines of how to relate to customers, and you're really just sort of on your own. You're your own business, and we're just facilitating you in having your own business, driving your car or cleaning people's homes.
Do you know if there's any legal precedence for people who are contingency employees who are seeking full employment recognition?
Excellent question. And yes, there are. And there are several very recent ones that actually are more on the worker side. The one that's cited a lot is FedEx drivers filed a lawsuit that was just decided in their favor that they should be employees. Of course, in that case, FedEx actually provided the trucks, whereas Uber and Lyft drivers provide their own vehicles. So, and there have been other lawsuits in the agriculture industry and in other industries that, you know, have been cited as favoring the worker side. But there have, over the years, also been precedents that favored the company side, too. But the FedEx one is cited a lot as fairly analogous to what Uber and Lyft drivers are seeking.
That's Carolyn Said. She's a business reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. So how would the different outcomes of these lawsuits affect the gig economy or the sharing economy?
Well, they could have wide-ranging effects, but of course these lawsuits are going to take months, if not or years, really, to wend their way through the court system. But the entire gig economy, all of these on-demand companies like Uber and Lyft and TaskRabbit and Mechanical Turk are built on the premise of having independent contractors. It's much easier for these companies to scale up or contract if they need to, if they're just, you know, have a much more casual relationship with the people doing the labor. So if that were to change, it would really dramatically revamp their business models.
So you mentioned more than a third of American workers today are contingency employees. That means they don't get salaries and benefits. They don't get these protections. What's driving that and this pretty rapid increase towards contingency employees?
Well, I think it's an outgrowth out of overseas outsourcing. This is basically like domestic outsourcing. It's cheaper for all companies, not just the gig economy companies. It's cheaper for all companies and more flexible to not have employees, to have contingent workers, because again, they can hire them quickly, but they can also fire them quickly or end their contracts quickly.
Well, if this is so good for the companies, and you know, we've been in a capitalist society for quite a long time, why hasn't this been the case for years? Why hasn't it been the case for decades? It only seems to be growing, you know, to a large extent recently. Is it because the tech economy and unregulated businesses like, say, Airbnb back before there were more regulations in San Francisco, or what's happening with Uber and Lyft? Is it because there aren't governmental regulations on some of these companies so they can kind of do what they want and they have more power over the employees?
Well, you know, the gig economy is actually a very small segment of the contingent workforce. I mean, many more contingent workers are in, you know, more traditional businesses than the gig. The gig economy is very visible and you know, very heavily covered. But contingent workers exist in all kinds of other industries already. I mean, everything from, you know, substitute teachers to nurses to, you know, on-call, all kinds of on-call workers or contingent workers as well. So that's sort of a long-existing thing. I wouldn't say that the tech industry pioneered it, but the tech industry has made it even more visible. And you know, the ones we're talking about, the Silicon Valley companies, I think in some ways we're focused on them because the companies themselves have millions and millions and millions of dollars in venture backing, and that kind of highlights the disparity or the inequality between the situation of the companies and the situation of the people who are actually helping generate money for the companies.
Because this is a difficult situation for a lot of workers to not have retirement plans, to not have benefits, to not have job security, how is it possible for this to change when the trends are more pushing towards an increase in the number of contingency employees?
Well, really, I think it would take court action or legislative action would be the only ways it is going to, is are the most likely ways it's going to change. There's no motivation for the companies to change it, and so why would they if it's a business model that's working for them?
That was San Francisco Chronicle reporter Carolyn Saeed talking with KLW's Ben Trefney about the relationship between tech and labor. Find links to Saeed's work at klw.org. Click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Smartphones make it a lot easier to connect with rides, with podcasts, with pretty much anything, but they also make it easier to disconnect from the real, non-virtual world around us. That's why hundreds of San Francisco high school students recently took part in a nationwide tech timeout. It's a challenge that asks them to unplug from digital devices for 72 hours. The tech timeout took place at the Schools of the Sacred Heart. They are two San Francisco private schools that are actually laced with technology. 5th to 12th graders do their assignments on school-issued iPads. So how would these digital students fare in an analog world? KLW's Christina Loring headed to Sacred Heart's Stuart Hall High School to find out.
Over 100 students from Stuart Hall High School crowd to a small chapel on their city campus. The minister of the school, Sergio Vasquez, stands up in front of the restless teenagers while they squirm in the chapel's wooden pews.
Close your eyes. Take a deep breath in to the count of four.
His calming voice takes the boys into a four-minute meditation.
Quietly exhale for four.
The moment of stillness is time for the boys to reflect upon their first 24 hours without access to technology.
Another deep breath in for four.
No iPad, no smartphone, no TV, no computer.
As we spend these 4 minutes in espacio. So I'd like for you to raise your hand if you participated yesterday, if you started off with the Tech Timeout Challenge. Please raise your hand. Thank you.
Nearly every boy raises a hand. Just the day before, they sealed their smartphones in an envelope and vowed not to use them for 72 hours. While this digital detox may seem like a small pill to swallow, consider this. The average teenager sends 3,364 texts per month and often clocks in around 11 hours of media consumption a day.
The experience that we have been invited to engage is a little awkward. And I hope you're realizing it's not because technology is bad. In fact, as you know, I value technology. It has helped my life tremendously.
Stuart Hall conducts much of its curriculum on an iPad. It tracks assignments through apps and assigns YouTube videos for homework. These students are part of a generation of teens who always have the internet and a smartphone in their life. And with 47% of students in the U.S. owning a smartphone, excessive screen time is hard to escape.
For me personally, I knew I was, like, addicted at some point.
That's Riley Ackrett, one of the student organizers of the timeout.
It just gave me a weird feeling knowing that I couldn't just do my homework straight for a good hour, maybe, without having to go back to my phone.
Like his peers, Riley toggles between social networks like Instagram and Snapchat and apps like Google Drive and Haiku, an online assignment app. He says he knew he needed a break from his phone when he kept refreshing his feeds minute after minute and putting off his homework.
I start to feel like jittery, like I'm on drugs or something, but it sounds like I'm on drugs, but I don't know, I just feel weird inside, like I feel anxious. And so now I just hope, it's like a detox, hopefully, if I just cleanse myself.
Another student organizer, Zeke Crawford, says he felt the same addiction. When he vowed to give up his phone, he felt so connected to his device, it almost seemed like they were breaking up.
The song I would sing is I Never Can Say Goodbye, but I feel confident in myself. I just got to stay positive.
A whole industry is taking advantage of adult digital addiction. Just up north in Mendocino County, for example, there's Camp Grounded, a three-day, $570 summer camp for adults to unplug. But here at Stuart Hall, the school's aim is to teach digital boundaries before the students are swallowed by distraction. When the school becomes both your enabler and your detox center, though, tech boundaries can get blurry. The school's director of educational innovation, Howard Levin, says he recognizes the irony of handing out iPads to every student and then taking their phones away.
My biggest concern is really the issues of the distraction of devices that are taking us away moment by moment from whether it's our own quiet conscious thoughts or our own reading or whatever.
Back at the chapel, it does feel a little bit like a rowdy support group for recovering addicts. Minister Sergio Vasquez addresses the boys.
Raise your hand if you ended the challenge already.
A few hands go up.
Thank you. Now, someone share with us, what was that like?
Students stand up in front of friends and faculty to confess their moments of weakness. One boy dropped out after the first 20 minutes.
Well, at first I thought I could do it, but then I sort of realized I couldn't really do it for 3 days. So I figured out might as well just quit now because
I was really bored last night. I took a walk. You know how bored you have to be to take a walk?
During the school day, it was really hard for me to get through the day without technology. When I got home and I finished all my homework, I didn't really know what to do. So I was drawing or playing games. And I eventually just went to bed early because I had nothing else to do.
Okay. Nice. Thank you.
So far, more than 12,000 kids in the U.S. and Canada have taken part in the Tech Timeout Challenge. Any school can sign up at any time. And adults can participate, too. The first step is admitting you have a problem. In San Francisco, I'm Christina Loring for Cross Currents.
So, do you unplug from technology regularly? Well, before you do, email us at news@klw.org and tell us about it. Or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW or call us at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Sandhya Dirks, Hannah Kingsley-Ma, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Casey Miner, Chris Hoff, Judy Silber, Raja Shah, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents Monday at 5. We'll learn about a predator that lives among us in San Francisco.
If a coyote feel threatened, then they might attack. Mm-hmm. You know, they want their space too. But at the same time, I've never heard of coyotes being in San Francisco, so that's kind of strange.
That's Monday at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. Thank you.
And this music is by Danny Click. He picked up the guitar for the first time when he was 6 years old, and he'll be picking it up again tomorrow night for a rare acoustic show at the Monkey House in Berkeley. Music starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.